Next is in the matter of Andrew Spark. If counsel could please step forward. May we please have appearances of counsel?
Counsel Hillary Gordon on behalf of the Office of Attorney Ethics.
And Mr. Spark, as you heard moments ago, you'll have the opportunity, if you'd like, to address the court at the end of the proceedings. Ms. Wharton.
May it please the court, this matter is before you following a motion for final discipline where four members of the Disciplinary Review Board voted for a 3-year suspension, three members voted for disbarment, and one member voted for a 1-year suspension. The OAE maintains that the 3-year suspension, the quantum of discipline that it recommended before the board argument, is appropriate. The facts are properly and fully elucidated on pages 3-9 of the DRB decision, and not surprisingly, there is no case on all fours with this matter and its unique subject matter. However, the Office of Attorney Ethics agrees with the Disciplinary Review Board that In re Kaplan 227 NJ 224 from 2016 provides strong support for the imposition of a 3-year suspension. Kaplan, leveraging his attorney status to smuggle cannabis, which was illegal at the time, and tobacco into a correctional facility, was paid $500 cash for each transaction, money he needed since his wife's breast cancer had spread to her bones, causing Kaplan to undertake costly renovations to his home to try to accommodate his wife's needs and limitations at that time. And his son, during the same time period, had developed an addiction to cocaine, which caused him to steal from the family and rack up tens of thousands of credit card debt in his father's name. The court, taking all these facts under consideration, imposed a 3-year suspension in that matter. The OAE has also considered the effect, if any, of the Jander and Daly decisions on this matter, where the respondents there, in those cases, were censured for bringing firearms into courthouses, and has determined that the 3-year suspension remains sound, and that although Daly and Jander were censured, that the situation here is sufficiently different that the 3-year suspension remains the proper quantum of discipline. Here, the differences are that respondent used and abused his position of trust as an attorney to gain access to secure attorney-client visitation rooms that would not have been available to other visitors. Also, a prison is an even more highly regulated and in controlled environment than a courthouse. That the conduct involved in the instant matter was intentional for sexual gratification, and that respondent's conduct was intentional in a way that Jander and Daly's conduct was not, in that they didn't plan to bring the firearms to the courthouse and they didn't have a purpose for bringing them there that was different than just the mere fact of having knowing possession of them at the time in which they went through metal detectors. Finally, the other factor is that despite protestations to the contrary, an inmate population by definition is vulnerable if for no other reason than the stigma of incarceration that affects women in particular that are incarcerated. Finally, the OAE would note that respondent was disbarred in Florida and New York for his misconduct. Discipline, since disbarment is not permanent in those jurisdictions, that would be in line with the 3-year suspension that's being recommended by the DRB majority and the OAE in this case. Further, the OAE notes that the conditions recommended by the DRB in their decision are appropriate, that prior to reinstatement, that respondent attend psychological counseling and provide a fitness to practice, that following reinstatement, he provide quarterly reports to the Office of Attorney Ethics documenting continued psychological counseling for a period of 2 years and until further order of the court, that those conditions are also appropriate. So unless there's further questions of me on this matter, we will submit based upon the record below.
Is there any medical evidence in the record that is relevant here?
Medical evidence?
Psychological evidence?
Beyond that he is being treated for a sex addiction, that there is evidence in the record that he has been proactive in obtaining the proper treatment.
For how long a period of time?
I believe he entered treatment even prior to his sentencing in Florida.
You said that the disbarments in Florida and New York are on a par with a 3-year suspension. Can you explain that?
Well, I'm not saying they're exactly on par, but what I will say is that Florida...
is how many years? Seven?
New York is seven, yes, sir. Yes, yes, Your Honor. And Florida's five. He was disbarred in Florida on January 21st of 2021, but it was set retroactively back to July 15th of 2019. So he could be reinstated or at least apply for reinstatement as early as August 15th of 2024, if I have my math right. And in New York, he was disbarred as of, because that followed after Florida as a motion of reciprocal in our final in New York from Florida. He was disbarred in New York on July 1st of 2021, so he could be reinstated as soon, or apply for reinstatement as soon as July 1st of 2028.
So those are substantially greater responses than the one that the OAE is asking for in this case.
Well, we don't have anything to run his suspension retroactive to because he was not temporarily suspended in New Jersey in our jurisdiction. So I guess my argument was that it's more analogous maybe to the Florida. It'll be kind of in between the two where he would be potentially be eligible here.
I think what you're saying is that the years he has left on those two disbarments.
Yeah.
Are equivalent to what the OAE is recommending in this case be the entire penalty. Is that right?
That's more articulate of way of trying to explain the dates, yeah, in this matter.
Questions, anyone? Thank you.
Good afternoon. I think this case presents a challenge to the court because the facts are lurid. The facts are nasty and they're not nice. And we need to be cautious that the level of discipline is based on the level of misconduct and the level of criminality and not on a visceral reaction. Fortunately, this court has a history of not reacting viscerally in cases like this, in a few cases that I'm going to discuss, and I'm happy to see that. The conduct here was using credentials, lawyer credentials, to see friends who were rather than clients in a jail, which is an abuse of that privilege. Also making inappropriate videos with those friends in the jail and bringing them out. As Ms. Horton said, there is not a case like this in New Jersey. And that's because usually a case of this sort would get to this court because a lawyer left items in a jail rather than bringing something out of a jail or simply using their credentials to see a friend or a family member in the jail, which I'm sure has happened, but it doesn't rise to the level of misconduct that would bring it to this court. It would probably rise to a request from the jail not to do that again. And of course, the case that has to do with bringing items into a jail is the Capalin case, which resulted in a 3-year suspension, but was far more serious and involved bringing drugs into a jail. Now, Capalin's been referenced by the board as analogous and by the Office of Attorney Ethics as analogous, but that really is only because there isn't a case in New Jersey that is analogous. I'd like to speak for just a moment about why Capalin does not apply to this case.
But before we get to other
yes,
cases,
Your Honor.
I just had a question about this case because I'd like your response to this. This is more than simply bringing something into jail or using one's status in an inappropriate manner. It's the coerciveness of the conduct and then the degrading behavior. If I understand correctly, your client caused these women to sign a document indicating how appreciative that they were and subjecting themselves to liquidated damages of $1 million. This is very, very problematic conduct all throughout. And it's behavior. It's not just the lurid nature. It's the conduct that
yes.
I'm referring to.
So the contract, Your Honor, that's an interesting issue because in this case, my client pled guilty to prostitution, to soliciting prostitution. And the guilty plea is conclusive proof for this court. But in fact, it's not really prostitution. It's really the making of pornography. And that was the intent. And the making of pornography with a consensual arrangement and with payment is not prostitution. The contract that Your Honor references was a contract for the making of pornography. The language that you talk about, where the women were to act appreciative, that was sort of a script for the video. So, we don't talk about this case as if it's pornography because my client pled guilty to prostitution, but in fact, prostitution wasn't really the charge. Pornography is legal, and prostitution ended up being the charge that the state of Florida levied that my client pled guilty to, so that's conclusive. As to the coerciveness, these were friends of my client. They were people that he knew from his past. They were people that he knew from his present at that time. They were people that he had a relationship with. They were consenting, informed adults. My client spoke to them on the telephone before he went, and they made arrangements for this. So this wasn't a situation where he showed up in the jail and coerced them or manipulated them in some way when he got there. This was an arrangement between consenting adults. It wasn't legal because they were in prison, but it wasn't more coercive because of that.
And he paid them $10 each for this.
You know, that was the allegation regarding the prostitution charge.
Didn't he allocute to that?
And he did, and that's sort of the problem that I'm having, because a conviction is conclusive proof for this court. So I didn't come here, obviously, to tell this court there was no prostitution, right? That wasn't my intent.
I know you're saying you're making this argument that wasn't really what happened and that wasn't the real charge, but he stood before the court and agreed to the plea allocution that indicated that he, in exchange for sexual favors, placed money in these women's commissary accounts. Isn't that correct?
He did, but again, that was in the context of an allocution for a guilty plea to prostitution, and people plead guilty for all kinds of reasons. And I'm not saying that my client shouldn't have pled guilty, because I can't say that. And certainly his conduct, he pled guilty to other things too, right? He pled guilty to having the videotape. But because the court raised the question about this contract, I have to address it. And the contract was for pornography, which is legal. And again, which outside of the jail would not be illegal. It becomes illegal because of the context of the case. And I can't really talk about the facts of the case and narrow them down to just what was allocated to in the guilty plea, because that just brings it down to the elements of the offense that is being pled guilty to. I hope that makes sense.
Yes.
So back to Kapalin and why it does not apply. The rationale of the DRB for Kapalin, for recommending the same 3-year suspension that Kapalin got, was that Kapalin did the same thing but had significant mitigating factors. But Kapalin did not do the same thing at all. Kapalin is much more serious. In 3 years, if 3 years was appropriate for Kapalin, then I submit that the suspension here should be significantly lower. Kapalin pled guilty in United States District Court to possession conspiracy for possession with intent to distribute drugs and smuggle them into a jail 8 times for money, and he served time in federal prison for that. Smuggling drugs into a jail is far more serious than what happened in this case, because drugs in a jail are not just against the rules, which we have in this case, and they're not just substances of abuse, they're currency. They affect the hierarchy in the jail, they're used to perpetrate other kinds of crimes in jails, they undermine the whole system, and even outside of a jail, a conviction in federal court for conspiracy to distribute drugs could result in disbarment. In contrast, Mr. Spark's actions would not be a crime outside of the jail, as we just discussed. Here, Mr. Spark, as I said a moment ago, took 2 videos out. And there is no question that he abused his privileges as a lawyer to gain access in a more private way to his clients. And there is no question that that erodes the trust between the institution and lawyers, who need to have easy and private access to their clients. But that really is where the harm ends in this case. Because to be clear, as I said a moment ago, these women were willing participants. They arranged everything over the phone with Mr. Spark. He had no authority or control over them at all. He had no disciplinary authority over them. There was no abuse of them. They were not his clients, and they were his friends. While Kapalan starts up here in seriousness, and the significant mitigating factors bring it down to 3 years, and mitigating factors are heavily weighed and should be in disciplinary proceedings, Mr. Spark's matter starts not up here, but significantly lower in seriousness. And he also had significant mitigating factors, which were recited by the DRB, but require more emphasis. And if I could just go over those mitigating factors. Mr. Spark self-reported his conduct in New York and New Jersey. He recognized his psychological problems and took them very seriously. As was stated by counsel, he started his therapy and his treatment before he even entered a guilty plea in Florida. He did everything he could to remediate the problem in this case. He did 30 days of inpatient counseling. He did outpatient counseling. He had significant psychiatric treatment. He submitted 2 psychological evaluations, one of which dealt in detail with the stressors and psychological issues that contributed to this conduct. And he successfully completed probation early in this case. And he had many letters of recommendation. Glowing letters. He's 60 years old with no disciplinary history of any kind. He'd been barred since 1991. He had a successful career. Although he has an Ivy League education, he spent a lot of his practice representing ordinary, often underprivileged people. And for 7 years, he was in the public sector as an attorney general. And Your Honor asked if there was any medical testimony in this case. And in fact, there is a medical report indicating that there were significant stressors that attenuated the end of Mr. Spark's job with the Attorney General's office. He started his private practice and he was also working full-time in a travel industry job. So he had way too much on his plate professionally. At the same time, his mother was diagnosed with cancer. His father was diagnosed with cancer and passed. He had an uncle who became very ill and passed. So he suffers from ADHD, anxiety, and depression. So there were significant medical and psychological mitigating factors in addition to the sex addiction, which he dealt with in a very serious way. So he's done everything that he could to remediate the problems that led to this case. And in that way, this case is more like the Farr case than the Kapalan case, Farr, F-A-R-R. There, as I know this court is aware, a prosecutor stole drugs from an evidence locker and manipulated the criminal justice system in numerous ways, in part because he was infatuated with an informant in that case. And the court found, and I quote, that he was an attorney who lost his ethical compass and went astray with aberrational conduct not likely to reoccur, who found his bearings through rehabilitation and psychiatric counseling. And that case resulted in a 6-month suspension. The facts were far more serious than this case. The mitigation was similar to this case. The result should be more similar to the Farr case than the Kapalan case.
Counsel, is your client practicing? Well, let me start. Is he eligible to practice now and in recent years in New Jersey?
He was eligible to practice in recent years in New Jersey, but he's been living in Florida.
Has he practiced in New Jersey?
Not that I'm aware of.
Does he intend to practice in New Jersey?
He would like to.
Is he barred anywhere else?
No, other than New York and Florida, which the court's aware of. I have to pick up my pen, Your Honor.
Sure.
I can't talk without it in my hand. So, in the respondent's brief, there are many more serious criminal cases that have resulted in lesser sanctions, and I'm not going to review all of them. But one I would like to review because it really demonstrates how a 3-year suspension would be out of line, and that's Mladenovic. There, an attorney had a DUI and a conviction for very serious anti-Semitic comments and terroristic death threats over a long period of time. And after that conviction, she sustained another conviction for similar conduct. And the DRB noted that the second conviction indicated that, unlike Mr. Spark, Ms. Mladenovic had not dealt with her issues. And other than that, they would have recommended a censure. Mladenovic was in practice for 10 years, not 30, as Mr. Spark has been. And clearly there were mental health issues in that case, as there are in this case. But she never presented proof of a diagnosis. She never presented treatment or prognosis. And she was suspended for 3 months. In contrast, Mr. Spark's conviction is for relatively minor offenses. He was never violent or threatening. And most importantly, he has provided substantial proof of mitigation and rehabilitation. More than mitigation, he's provided substantial proof of rehabilitation, and his discipline should be less than Mladenovic, not almost 3 years more. The last case that I would like to address with the court is the Jackson case, in Ray Jackson, because that involved a more lurid type of situation. Although much worse, again, than this case. In Ray Jackson involved two criminal convictions for taking upskirt photographs of 55 women. And like this case, it resulted in disbarment in New York. So that's an important similarity. But in New Jersey, only a 1-year retroactive suspension was imposed. Like Mr. Spark, Mr. Jackson acknowledged his conduct. He was very remorseful. He engaged in psychiatric treatment. And in that case, the DRB and this court noted numerous lewdness-type convictions that resulted in short suspensions. And the court noted many cases of a sexual nature that resulted in discipline less than a suspension. So while Jackson, like Mr. Spark, accepted full responsibility and engaged in appropriate psychiatric treatment as Mr. Spark did, his far more serious conduct and similar mitigation resulted in a 1-year suspension. There is no justification to impose a harsher discipline on Mr. Spark, given his 30 years of unblemished conduct and his extraordinary rehabilitative efforts. And the fact that this case really did involve no victims, which goes back to the court's question about wasn't that an element here? And there really are no victims in this case. The young women were friends, and they have certified that they didn't feel like victims in the case. Finally, I would like to turn to the DRB decision, just briefly. I would note that the DRB said that Mr. Spark would be eligible to reapply in Florida about the same time as he would in New Jersey with a 3-year suspension, and this goes to a question that Your Honor asked Ms. Horton. That was part of their rationale for recommending a 3-year suspension. But as Ms. Horton said, Mr. Spark is going to be eligible to reapply in Florida in August of 2024. So at this point, that rationale more accurately supports a 1-year suspension than a 3-year suspension. In the DRB decision, Vice Chair Singer's findings were on par. She recognized the mitigation. She recognized the lack of victims. She distinguished Kapalin, and she recommended a 1-year suspension. Mr. Spark has asked me to note that Vice Chair Singer did state that there were misrepresentations, Mr. Spark going into the jail to see clients, showing his attorney ID. Mr. Spark does wish the court to know that he never affirmatively said he was there to see clients, but he does recognize that an assumption would have been made. And that's in his certification that's been presented to the court. The board members who thought that more serious sanctions ought to be imposed thought that because they thought the women were vulnerable, and I dispute that, and because they thought there might be sexual assault here, but our criminal statutes are very clear. There is no sexual assault here because there was no supervisory power or disciplinary power over them. They happened to be women who were incarcerated, but Mr. Spark wasn't part of that process. And finally, the women were not in more danger or more vulnerable because this was a unmonitored room. While it was a more private room than public areas in the jail, and that's what allowed this to happen, the fact that Mr. Spark did access that room, lawyer conference rooms are not unmonitored in any jail. Lawyers wouldn't be safe if lawyer conference rooms were unmonitored. They're monitored either by video or by windows. And Mr. Spark's certification says that there were windows in the room in this case. These women were certainly not in danger, extra danger, because they were in this room. At the end of the day, this is a lawyer who used his credentials to gain access to a more private location to share inappropriate contact with two friends, and it really is not more than that. Looking at those facts and compared to other cases, a censure or a short suspension is appropriate.
Questions, anyone?
Thank you.
Thank you. Do you want to consult with Mr. Sparks and see if he'd like to address the court?
He would like to address the court, Your Honor.
Please come to the stand.
Yeah, may it please the court. First, I want to thank you for the opportunity to appear before you and for your consideration. And I'm sorry that, you know, your time has had to be used for my conduct, which, you know, was improper. Clearly, I'm extremely remorseful for my conduct. I take full responsibility for it. My conduct reflects a terrible judgment. And I take ownership of that, and I live my life a lot more carefully than I did 5.5 years ago. I better appreciate now how my actions could have caused tangible harm, both to access to justice for incarcerated persons, had more stringent security measures been put in place, which was a concern, and in other ways. I didn't think about that really beforehand, and that's on me. The conduct I engage in is not going to reoccur. Through therapy, I've worked hard to learn why I use such poor judgment and acted the way I did, and I've gained insight into that conduct through the therapy, as well as just thinking about it when not in therapy. I'm deeply ashamed by my misconduct and the way it's affected my family's name, and my mother especially. I hope you allow me to resume practicing law and to continue representing regular people like I always have. Almost everybody I've ever represented is either poor or middle-class person. And that's basically it. So thank you for listening to me and for your consideration of both my comments and my attorney's comments on my behalf.
Thank you, Mr. Smart. We'll take the matter under advisement.